Morning. Today's daf and Bavmitzia is Lamed Hey. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learned Lezech and Ishmas Libik Arvela Vashmuel. We're Lamed Almed Beis. Let's start again with the statement of Rav Huna. Yesterday we started the third parak of the Masechta, Parak HaMafkin. And what we learned yesterday is that in the event that a shomer was given an item to watch, and the item, let's talk a simple case where he's a shomer chinam, and the item got stolen from him. So what he could do is one of two things. One thing he could do is just simply make a shvuah. Really sorry, item was stolen from me, I'm going to be exempt with the shvuah that I'm about to make, and he can make a shvuah. However, the Mishnah says, if he would like to, he can pay for the item. We learned over the course of yesterday's daf, he doesn't actually have to pay for the item, but as long as he makes a commitment to pay for the item, so he purchases the item. And with that purchase of the item, so now any benefit that comes from the item, now I don't mean any benefit, because we learned yesterday's daf, I'm going to review in just a moment, but most every benefit that comes from the item now belongs to the shomer, not to the Baal HaPikadon, because he bought it. So that means that that in the event that, let's say, a ganav is caught, and the ganav has to pay kefil, so who's kefil going to go? It's going to go to the shomer, because the shomer bought the item. We learned yesterday's daf that doesn't apply to every benefit that comes from the animal. Giza v'avoda, what about the shearings of the animal? I didn't mean giza v'avoda. I said it, but I didn't mean that. We're not talking about carbon. Giza uvladeha, what about the shearings of the animal and the offspring that are born to the animal? That still belongs to the Baal HaPikadon. And what we did yesterday is we went to try to explain yesterday why that distinction works, and we also tried to explain yesterday how exactly the kinyan works, meaning when exactly does the kinyan take place. We know that a person cannot buy a future. You can't buy davar shelo ba'al ha'olam. So how is it within the realm of the possibility that the shomer can buy a future? So again, we discussed this yesterday. And the pshat that we offered yesterday is that we offered a couple of pshatim yesterday, but one of the pshatim that we offered yesterday is that really the kinyan is retroactive to the time of the mesira. Okay. That's what we saw yesterday. And then we were treated yesterday at the very end of yesterday's daf, which is where we're going to start today. And that is the halacha of Rav Huna. What's Rav Huna's halacha? Is that everything said and done, the shomer still has to make a shvua. What shvua does the shomer have to make? A very simple one. The item is no longer by me. Because Rav Huna said, here's a concern. Concern is that the shomer was given an item. He's looking at the item. He's looking at the item. And finally he says, you know what? I really like it. I'd like to keep it. So, and I'm not a bad guy, meaning I'll pay for it. So we are concerned that the shomer, nasan ba einav, he basically took a liking to the item, and basically wants to keep the item, he'll pay for it. So out of concern of that, so what we're going to do is we're going to have the shomer make a shvua that the item is not by him. Okay, so for a full picture of what we learned yesterday, in the event that a shomer either lost the item or the item was stolen from him, so he has an option to pay for the item, but as we just concluded, he also still has to make a shvu, and the shvu is that the item is not by him. That is that's the halacha that we learned together in yesterday's daf. To that now, the Gemara is going to challenge Rav Huna based on a Mishnah in Shavuos. So where we start today on Lamed Almed Beis is that we're going to learn together a Mishnah in Shavuos, and the Mishnah in Shavuos will seemingly be difficult to the halacha of Rav Huna. In the Gemara, we find ourselves right in the middle of Lamed Almed Beis. We're going to start again from the words Amar Rav Huna. And let's get underway. With the concern that maybe he took a liking to the item, and that he's just keeping the item and paying for it, so therefore we have him make a shvua. Okay, adkan, mitzvah. The Gemara now is going to challenge Rav Huna based on the Mishnah and Shavuos. The Mishnah and Shavuos has the following. Now the Mishnah and Shavuos, here's what we know, this is a basic rule. There are four cases in the Mishnah, but all you need to know to understand the Mishnah is that if you are kofar b'kol, if you deny everything, so you don't make a shvuah. If you're mod b'miksas, then you do make a shvuah. Okay, something we already knew going into the Mishnah Shavuos. The Mishnah Shavuos is going to formulate this in one of four different cases. Case number one: Amav v'tzkaver l'amashkan v'avad amashkan. So let's say a person lends money and he actually takes a collateral against the loan, and then he loses the collateral. Okay, v'amar lo. And here is the dialogue now that takes place between the malva and the lova. The malva says, "Sela hiviticha alav shekel hayashava shekel hayashava." So the malva says to the lova, "Look, here's the story. I lent you money, And I lent you to over a collateral, and the collateral was, the loan value was a selah, and the collateral value was a shekel. Okay, obviously, in order for us to understand this Mishnah, we just have to know our currencies. A shekel is half of a selah. A selah is equal to 2 shekels. And a selah in of itself is worth 2 dinarim. So that means that a shekel is worth 4 dinarim. Okay, I'll say that a couple of times, so you get to hear that again and again. So again, so the lender says to the borrower, "Look, I'm really sorry, but let's just now do a balance sheet. I lent you a selah. The item that you deposited by me was only worth a shekel. So you basically now, I'm really sorry, but there's still a shekel outstanding on the loan. You owe me a shekel. V'hala amar lo ki ela selah hil vitani alav selah hayashava." And the lover says to the malveh, "I agree with you, but up to the value of the collateral. The loan amount was a selah. I totally agree with you about that. But the item I gave you was worth a selah. So in other words, as far as I'm concerned, it is a wash. Meaning, I lend. Yes, it's true, I borrowed a selah from you, but the collateral that I gave you was worth a selah and not worth a shekel the way you say." So the Mishnah Shavua says, Pater. Under those circumstances, now the lover doesn't have to make a Shavua. Why? Because basically, he's kofer b'kol. Meaning, the claim against him is that he owes a shekel, and his counterclaim is, "No, I don't. I don't owe you anything." So this is a classic case of kofer b'kol. The Mishnah Shavua says, the lover doesn't have to make a Shavua whatsoever. Case number two. In case number two, we're starting off with the same claim by the Malva. The Malva says to the Lova, "I lent you a selah. I know you gave me collateral. And the value of the collateral was a shekel. V'hala omer loki ela selah vitani alav shlosha dinarim hayashava." And the Lova says to the Malva, "No, you have it all wrong. But rather, yes, it's true, you lent me a selah, and yes, it's true, I gave you collateral, and the collateral was worth 3 dinarim, which means basically that I owe you, your claim against me is that you owe me a shekel. My counterclaim against you is, no, I only owe you half that amount." This is what's called modem mixas. The lova is making a partial admission to the obligation. So chayef. So under those circumstances now, the lova has to make a shvua because he is modem mixas. He makes a partial admission. Okay, that's case one and case two. Let's continue. Case number three. Sela hilvitani alav. Now, in case number three, the one who is starting the claim now is the lova. And the lova makes the following claim. "You know, you lent me a sela. Bez hayashave. And you know the item that I gave you was worth 2 selaim. In other words, I gave you collateral that was twice as much as the loan. Now that's not strange, meaning the collateral doesn't have to match the loan. The collateral was just meant to be used as security. So the fact that the lova gave something that was of more value, that's not strange. And in fact, now the lova is making the following claim. "Look, you lent me a selah, but I gave you collateral that was worth 2 times that amount." So now the lova is saying to the malva, "You owe me." V'hala omer lo ki ela selah hivitach alach selah hayashava. And the malva says to the lova, "The loan amount, we're in agreement. I lent you a selah. But the item that you gave me was not worth 2 selaim, it was only worth 1 selah. So now the malva is of the opinion that we're at a wash. So the malva is making a full denial of any claim made against him. So this is what's called kofer b'kol. So the Mishnah says pater. So under those circumstances now, the malva doesn't have to make a shvua because he's denying any claim made against him. Now, fourth case of the Mishnah. Sela hilvitani alav. Shnayim hayishava. So again, the lova goes to the malva, and the lova says to the malva, "You lent me a selah, and I gave you collateral, and the collateral was worth 2 selaim. And the value of the collateral was worth 2 selaim. So again, the lova is making a claim against the malva. You owe me a selah. V'hala amar lo ki ela selah hivitich alach alav he dinarim hayishava. And the malva says to the lova, You're wrong at the end. Meaning, yes, it's true, I lent you a selah, but in terms of how much the collateral is worth, the collateral was worth 5 dinarim. So in other words, your claim against me is that I owe you a full selah. My counterclaim is that I don't owe you a full selah. I owe you 3 dinarim, 3/4 of a selah. So, under those circumstances, now the Malva is making a partial admission to the obligation made against him. So, under those circumstances, Yechayev. Okay, so we have four cases over here in the Mishnah. In the first two cases, the Malva is making a claim against the Lova, saying that the loan amount exceeded the collateral. In cases three and four, it's the Lova making a claim against the Malva, because he claims that his collateral is worth more than the actual loan itself. And the basic rule of the Mishnah, meaning after all four cases are said and done, the basic rule of the Mishnah is that if the counterclaim is a full denial of the obligation, no shvuah. If the counterclaim is a partial admission of the original claim, so then you make a shvuah. Mod demimitzas. So far, so good. We're not there yet, meaning what we have done so far, familiarize ourselves with the Mishnah. Then the Mishnah concludes with the following clause. Mi nishba. Now, who makes the shvua? Misha pikadon etzlo. It is the one who is holding on to the pikadon. Now, the one holding on to the pikadon. Now, just as an interesting side point, the Mishnah uses the word pikadon, but obviously over here we're not talking about a pikadon. We're talking about a mashkon. In this context, kainohach. It's the same basic idea. In other words, there was a deposit of an item made by one person to another. So who's going to be making a shvua? So the Mishnah says, well, the one who's holding on to the item, or the one who was holding on to the item, he's the one who's going to be making the shvua. In all four cases, that would be talking about the malva. Why? Because imagine that if we have the other person making the shvua, well, that could lead to trouble. Because if the other person, in this case the lover, was the one who was going to be making the shvua, well, he'll be making a shvua in terms of how much the item was worth, and then the malva might at any point in time just come up and say, oh, by the way, you swore it was worth this much, here's the item, and here's how much it's worth. So therefore, in all cases, we're going to have the holder of the collateral going to be making the shvua. That is the end of the Mishnah. Okay, so good. Excellent question. We're almost there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Adkan Divrei HaMishnah, that is the end of the Mishnah in Shavuos. Now Ahaya. Now, even before we ask a question against Rav Huna, obviously a clarification point needs to be made. Danny, you already raised the subject. The Gemara now is going to clarify. Ahaya. Now we say over here that the one who's holding the pikadon, he's the one who's going to be making a shvua. That's going on in which case? Ilema, Asefa. So the Gemara says, are we talking now about the latter case of the Mishnah? But typically, the shvua gabe malvehi, the hakamod demimiksa satana. Now the Gemara says, now in the latter cases of the Mishnah, remember now, who is the claim being made against? It's being made against the malva. So of course he's the one who's going to be making the shvua. Now again, there's cases three and four. In case number three, there's no shvua altogether because it's kofar bakol. In the fourth case, there is a shvua the malva is going to be making, but the shvua that he's going to be making is not for any external reason. The shvua he's going to be making is because he's making a partial admission. So there, of course, he's going to be making a shvua for the simple reason that he is a moda b'miksas. So when the Mishnah concludes by saying, and make sure the malva makes a shvua, because you never know, he may just come up with the item. What do you mean? That's not the reason why he's making a shvua. The reason why he's making a shvua is because he's moda b'miksas, because he's a partial admission. Ela amar shmuel aresha. So the Gemara says, okay, so the way to understand the Mishnah in Shavuos is that last clause of the Mishnah was not going on the latter cases of the Mishnah, on cases 3 and 4, but rather it was going on cases 1 and 2. On cases 1 and 2, even though it is the Lova making a claim against the Malva, sorry, let me say that again and let me say that better. Even though it's the Malva making a claim against the Lova, but in cases 1 and 2, we're still going to have the Malva make a Shavuah because we're concerned. So the Gemara says, now even on that point also needs clarification. My Aresha. So I'm sorry. Ela Amashmul Aresha. My Aresha. Asefa Deresha. So the Gemara says, now obviously we're not talking about case number one, because case number one is Kofar Bakol. We're talking about case number two, where there's a partial admission. Selevitech Alach Shekel Hayashava. So in case number two, the Gemara is just simply reviewing for us where the Malva says to the Lova, I lent you a Sela. And the Lova says, yeah, but I gave you collateral. And the collateral was worth a shekel. V'halamar loki ela sela hiviten alach shloshi dinarim hayashave. And the malva says to the lova, no, you're mistaken. You think that the collateral was worth a shekel. I'm telling you that it's worth one more dinar than that. So you're making a partial admission to me. Chayev. Deshua Gabelovahu. So now, truth be told, is that who in theory should be making the Shua? Obviously the Lova. The borrower is making a Shua because he is the one making a partial admission to the claim. The claim was made by the Malva, and the Lova is making a partial admission. So truth be told is that the Lova is the one who is making the Shua. The Amar Abanu Lishava Malva Shemi Sheva Zevi Yotzeh Halatz Pikadon. And now finally, after putting everything together, now we understand the Mishnah Shavuos. The Mishnah Shavuos says, yes, in theory, the Lova should be the one making the Shavuos because he's the one making the partial admission, but we are concerned that maybe the Malva, after the Shavuos was made, is simply going to procure the item, show everybody that the item is what the item's real value is worth, and that means now that the Lova is going to be making a Shavuos falsely. So for that reason, the Chachamim took the Shvua and turned it from the Lova over to the Malva.
Didn't we say that the item was missing?
That's exactly where we're headed in this. So now, we have learned the Mishnah and Shvuos together. And after having now learned good pshat in the Mishnah and Shvuos, so now what we're saying is that our focus now is on case number two. Case number two is where the Malva makes a claim against the Lova. You owe me money. And as far as the collateral is concerned, so the Malva says the collateral is only worth a shekel, half of a sella. The Lova says to the Malva, you are mistaken. That's not the true value of the collateral. Collateral is worth three. So he is partially admitting to the obligation that he owes. So under those circumstances, he has to make a shvua of what's called motive b'mixas. However, now we also learn together that because the Chachamim were worried that since the Malva was the holder of the item, and the item may be in the possession of the Malva, so the Chachamim said to the Lova, look, under these circumstances, even though the Torah prescribes that you're the one who's going to make the Shavua, the Chachamim say, we're going to turn it around and we're going to have the Malva make the Shavua. Now, with all that said, the Gemara is basically going to ask Alex's question, which is, V'im Isa, we are now on the top of Lamed Hei Amud Aleph, V'im Isa L'd Rav Huna, now let's think. Remember what Rav Huna taught us, that in the event that the Shomer claims that the item is no longer by him, so he has to make a Shavua that the item is no longer by him. So V'im Isa L'd Rav Huna, Kevin the Mishaba, Mava, Shein, Bereshus, Hechamatzi, Mapig La. So now, not only in this case is the Mava claiming that he lost the item, but on top of that, he's also, according to Rav Huna, going to have to make a shvua that the item is no longer by him. So now that we know of Rav Huna, now we are lost in the Mishnah Shavuos. Because the Mishnah Shavuos says, I'm worried. According to Rav Huna, what's your concern? Rav Huna says that the Malva is going to be making a shvua. And the shvua that the Malva is going to be making is, the item is no longer by me. So now we have removed that concern out of the way according to Rav Huna, so then we should come back to the Din Torah. The Din Torah says that since the Lova is making a partial admission, it should be the Lova making the shvua, not the Malva. That is the question against Rav Huna. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava. So the Gemara is going to give a number of suggestions. We'll start off with Rava's suggestion, Amar Rava Sheyesh Edim Shenisrafa. So the first suggestion of the Gemara is, well, maybe what the Malva did, and the reason why he doesn't have to make a Shavua, is because he brought in witnesses that the item was actually destroyed. Okay. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then, if Edom say that the item was destroyed, so now we really have nothing to be concerned about. Meaning, well, let's make the Malva make a Shavua because he may bring the item forth after the Shavua is made. Witnesses said that the item was destroyed. Why should that be concerned? So the Gemara says, El Amar Rav Yosef. So the Gemara immediately dispenses with the answer of Rav. The Gemara gives another answer. Sheyesh Edom Shenigneva. So the Gemara says, well, witnesses said that the item was stolen. So we know that the item is still in existence, but witnesses said that the Malva doesn't have it anymore because witnesses said that the item was actually stolen. So if so, Mehechi Maisila. So the Gemara says, okay, but I'll just re-ask the same question. If witnesses said that the item was stolen, what's our concern? The Malva is not going to be able to procure the item. The item was stolen from him, and we're not guessing, and we're not even just going on the word of the Malva. Witnesses said that the item was stolen from him. So the Gemara says, the Taruchu Maisila. So the Gemara says, well, that's true, but, you know, the Malva may run down after the Ganav and find the item. So the Gemara says, really? Well, if we're worried about recovering the item from the Ganav, Well, just as much as the malva can recover the item from the malva, can't the lova also recover the item from the ganav? Now, bishlam amalva yadaman ka'ayav anafik bebeise. Gemara says, yeah, but over here now we're going to go on just our gut intuition. Our gut intuition is that who can recover the item from the ganav? Malva is going to have a much better chance because it was from the malva that the item was stolen. The malva has a better chance of knowing who went into his house, who left his house, but the azavatarchu maisila, and therefore he has a chance of recovering the item. Elalovam yadaman ayel v'nafik bebeis the malva. But do you really expect that the lova is going to know who went in and out of the house of the malva? And do you really think that the lova is going to be able to recover the item from the ganav? It's a far chance that the lova is going to be able to recover the item. So now, in defense of Rav Huna, the case in the Mishnah Shavuos is extraordinarily limited. It's only talking about a case where the malva will be making a shvua, but only because witnesses come forward and said that the item was stolen from him. And there is still a chance that the malva is going to recover the item because he's going to find the ganav. And that's why we'll have the malva swear, not the lova swear. Because if in the event that the lova were to swear, the malva may just simply, at a future point in time, come up with the item and say, how could you have sworn that the item was worth this? Look, here's the item, and here's how much it's worth. Okay, that is all approach number one in the Mishnah Shavuos in defense of Rav Huna. Approach number two. Abai Amar Gzera Shema Yiton V'yomer Lo Acher Shavuah Mitzasiyah. The Abai says, no. You know what, let us not put ourselves in a position where we have to limit the Mishnah Shavuos so much. Maybe we could say the following. Rav Huna's right. When you're a shomer and you claim that the item is no longer in your possession, so you're going to have to make a shvua. And the Mishnah Shvuos acknowledges that. Well, however, here's what the Mishnah Shvuos is concerned about. Even after the malva makes a shvua and says the item is no longer by me, he can, at a later point in time, simply come up with the item and say, look, at the time when I made the shvua, I didn't have the item by me. But you know what? Lo and behold, I recovered the item after my shvua. My shvua was in earnest, it was an honest shvua, and the item came to me after I made the shvua. So out of concern of that, so we're always going to have the malva make the shvua, not the lova. That's Abai's explanation. Rav Ashi says, again, all this is unnecessary in explaining the Mishnah and Shavuos. The Mishnah and Shavuos could be the following. Rav Ashi Amar, Zenishba, Vizenishba. No. You know what the Mishnah and Shavuos means? The Mishnah and Shavuos means that both are going to be making the shvua, the lova and the malva. The lova is going to be making a shvua. Again, remember, we're talking about case number two, where the lova is making a partial admission to the obligation that he owes the malva. Truth of the matter is the lova is going to make a shvua. Why? Mod b'mikzas. Truth of the matter is the malva is going to be making a shvua. Why? Because of Rav Huna. Because we're worried that the malva may have taken a liking to the item, and so therefore we're just going to have him make a shvua that he no longer has the item in his possession. And the Mishnah just simply is reflecting both. Well, actually, to be a little bit more accurate, the Mishnah Shavuos is focusing on Rav Huna's additional Shavua. Zenish Bashen Bereshuso, that's what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah means that the Malva is going to be making the Shavua that the item is no longer in his possession, Vizenish Bakama Havashava. And as far as the Lova is going to be concerned, he'll make a Shavua in terms of how much it's worth, in that he has made a partial admission. The Hachikamar. And the only thing the Mishnah in Shavuos is teaching us is Mi Nishba Tchila. It's just a question of who draws first? Who makes the first Shavuah? It's going to be the Malva making that first Shavuah that the item is no longer by him? Fine. So now we're not concerned that the item is there, is going to be procured anymore by the Malva, because he swore that the item is not by him. Now we turn to the Lova. Now Lova, your claim is how much of the item is worth? You make a Shavuah in terms of how much the item is worth.
Who establishes the value of the item when he borrows?
Right. In other words, which really, and if we would have done an appraisal prior to this, and Beis Din would have validated the appraisal, my guess would be that we wouldn't be going through all this. That's my guess. Okay, and the Gemara says, and that is Rav Ashi's resolution of the Mishnah Shavuos. Here's what we've done so far. We have stated the halach of Rav Huna that when you're a shomer and you're claiming that the item is no longer by you, so you have to back that claim with a shvua saying that the item is no longer by you. The Mishnah Shvuos in case number two seems to be problematic according to Rav Huna, and the Gemara in defense of Rav Huna has proposed a number of answers. The final answer, Rav Ashi's answer, is the answer that the Gemara has concluded on. It's the answer that the Rambam quotes, which is that truth of the matter is they're both going to be making a shvua. The Malva make a shvua according to Rav Huna. Shmona, that he no longer has the item by him. And then after that, now the Lov will make a Shmona in terms of how much the item is worth, being that he made a partial claim. Okay. Continuing in the Gemara, we're in Lamed Hamad Aleph, we're about at the midway point in the Daf. Rav Huna bar Techlifa Mishmei de Rav Amar Reisha de Seifa Tiyufta le Rav Huna. Now the Gemara says, let's move on in the Mishnah. Well, in other words, we're going to still stay on that Mishnah Shavuos, and let's go to case number three, Reisha de Seifa, right, the beginning of the second half of the Mishnah, case number three. And what is case number three? The Gemara reviews it for us. Sela hil vitani alav shtayim hayashave. Here the claim is going, starting with the Lova. Lova says to the Malva, I borrowed a Sela from you, but I gave you collateral, and that collateral is worth 2 selaim. The Hala Omer Loki Ella Sela Hilvitich Allah Sela Hayashav Potter. And in the Mishnah says that what the Malva's counterclaim is that you're wrong. You're right about the loan amount, you're wrong about the value of the collateral. The collateral is not worth 2 selaim, as you say, but rather the value of the collateral is worth 1 sela. So basically, the claim made against the Malva is denying all of it. So now the Mishnah says Potter. It's kofer bakol. Now the Gemara says, "V'inisa l'drav huna migu the mishtave malve shein bereshus mishtave na me'agogo shvua kama yashave." So the Gemara says, "So over here, let's please consider that according to Rav Huna, the malve is making a shvua. Remember, the shomer is always making a shvua according to Rav Huna. So step one, the malve is making a shvua that the item is no longer by him." Oh, you're already in Beis Din and you're already making a Shvua. We have a concept called Gilgal Shvua. Once you're making one Shvua, we have an opportunity now to have you make secondary and tertiary Shvuas as well. So the Gemara now says, according to Rav Huna, since the Malva has to make a Shvua that it's no longer in his possession, while we're here, why don't you make a secondary Shvua in terms of what the value of the collateral actually was? This is a question against Rav Huna. Am Rav Ashi, Am Risa, L'shmai Tekamah de Rav Kahana, V'am Elita, Hei B'mami, no. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a very strong question against Rav Huna. So the Gemara, in defense of Rav Huna, says, well, maybe the third case of the Mishnah Shavuos is talking about a very specific scenario in which the Lova says to the Malva, I trust you. So the Gemara says, V'nahamni Lova L'malva Nami Baha, Kama Hava Shava. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, if we're talking about where the Lova says to the Malva, I trust you that you no longer have the item by you, so why don't we also say, I trust you in terms of how much the collateral is worth? So the Gemara says, Lo Kim Le Begave. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that is, that's unexpected. Meaning that I can understand where the Lova says to the Malva, you know what, generally speaking, you're a good guy. And if you say the item is no longer by you, fine, I believe you. And I'm not going to make you make a shvua on that. However, how much was the collateral worth, I know better than you do. It was my item, it wasn't your item. I know better than you in terms of how much the collateral is worth. So on that point, you tell me that you no longer have the item by you, fine. I'm not going to have you make a shvua over there. You're telling me that it was worth only 1 sela? No. I'm telling you it was worth 2 selaim. So the Gemara says, lo kimle begave. V'nehamne malva lalova de kimle begave. So the Gemara says, well, why doesn't the malva trust the lova? Meaning, why isn't there reciprocity trust? If the lova is telling the malva, you're a good guy, you're telling me that the item is no longer by you, I believe you, why doesn't the malva say to the lova, you know what? You trusted me, I'll trust you. You're telling me that the item was worth 2 selaim, I trust you. So the Gemara says, lo mehem and lay. Well, the Malva doesn't trust the Lova. So the Gemara says, there is no reciprocity trust. And to which the Gemara says, umayishna Lova de mehem and lay la Malva, umayishna Malva de lo mehem and lay la Lova. Well, that seems odd. Meaning, we are really constructing a scenario in which the Lova says to the Malva, I trust you. And if you say the item is no longer by you, so that is, right, the Lova would generally trust the Malva, and meanwhile, in the very same case, we're also saying that the Malva doesn't trust the Lova, and the Gemara says, yes. Human nature dictates that in fact is so. Mekayim be b'malva tumas yisharim tenachem. Malva mekayim. I'm sorry. Lova mekayim be b'malva tumas yisharim tenachem. Malva mekayim le b'lova v'selaf bogdim yishadim. And the Gemara quoting Psukim. The Gemara is quoting Pesukim from Mishlei. The Pesukim in Mishlei dictates the following. Let's take the pasuk step by step. The first part of the pasuk is Tumas Yisharim Tenachem, which means that basically the righteous are tamim, right? They are literally perfect but trustworthy, honest people. And meanwhile, the second half of the pasuk is V'solof Bogdim Yishadim. But meanwhile, if you have a bogate, if you have somebody who's rebellious, Yishadim, he's going to be destroyed by his own rebelliousness. Rashi explains the Gemara like this. Malva, generally speaking, is a good guy. How do we know he's a good guy? So number one, he lent money. By virtue of the fact that you lend money to somebody else, that indicates you're a good guy. Rashi actually takes it a little bit further than that. I'm going to quote the Rashi. So Mikra zeh tumas yisharim tenachem, im lo sha'adam ne'eman v'yashar hu, lo haya ma'asher noso min ha'shamayim. Rashi goes actually one step further. Rashi says, look, if you have money in this world, it means that you're a good guy, you have zechuyos. Kadosh Baruch Hu would not entrust a person with money unless he, generally speaking, was a good guy. Now, okay. Now, I know, in other words, my life experience has told me that that's not always true, but we're speaking here in generalities. In generalities, the malva is generally viewed as the first part of the pasuk in Mishlei, of Tumas Yisharim. Tumas Yisharim Tenachem. Kadosh Baruch Hu will give nechama. He will be gracious to somebody who is a straight shooter, and that's the malva. On the other hand, you have the lova. The guy's in desperate need of money. The guy borrowed money, so the guy is just simply out of luck. And I can. The Gemara is basically saying I can easily envision where on one hand the lova says to the malva, "You're a good guy. I trust you," and at the same time the malva says to the lova, "I don't trust you as much." And so the lova could say to the malva, you say the item is no longer by you, good, I trust you. And at the same time, the malva will say to the lova, you're saying how much was that collateral worth? I don't think you're right. In fact, I'm only going to trust you if we go to Beis Din and you make a shvua. Okay, ad kan. Okay, now I'll breathe. So, when all said and done, the halach of Rav Huna, that when you're a shomer and the claim that you made is the item is no longer by you, so you have to make a shvur. The shvur that you make is that the item is no longer by me. For fear, for concern that you may have taken a liking to the item and you may want to end up keeping the item. As a result of that, so the shomer who claims that the item is no longer by him has to make a shvur. The Mishnah in Shvuos seems to be difficult according to Rav Huna from a couple of aspects. And the Gemara, in both of those aspects, defended Rav Huna in giving ukimtas, giving certain scenarios in that Mishnah in Shavuos. And the halacha falls like Rav Huna, that the shomer does have to make a shvua in the event that he claims that the item is no longer by him. Ready? Yes.
Going back to the Mishnah in Shavuos, are they arguing about what he gave him or the value?
Value. Value of the item.
So it's not, they all agree it was four oranges, but they were great oranges.
Everyone's in agreement in terms of what the loan amount was, and the only point of dispute between the malva and the lova is how much the value of the item was. In the first two cases, the malva is saying that the item was worth less, and in the third or fourth case, the lova is saying the item was worth more than the loan amount.
What is it? Was that a subjective? Like, we all agree, we gave you four oranges if you got done, but they were great oranges, not great oranges.
Or he gave him, let's say, precious metal, and it wasn't, again, like we said earlier, it wasn't appraised at the time, and the lova made an assumption of how much it was worth, and the malva made a different assumption. Okay, how gavra the ifkid kipi gabe chavrei. Okay, and this now segues into the next discussion of the Gemara. Here we go. The Gemara tells the following anecdote: the person left kipe earrings by his friend. And Amrle Havli Kipe. It was a regular deposit. It was a pikadon. Right? And watch my earrings for me. I'm going away. Fine, no problem at all. I come back and I say, Havli Kipe. Okay? Thank you very much for your job of watching the earrings for me. Can you give them back to me? Amrle Lo Yadani Heche Ezvini. And so the Bala Pikadon, the watchman says, I'm really sorry. I don't know where they are. A simple excuse of, I lost track of where they were. So also come into Rav Nachman, Amalei, kolo yadana pshiyasahi. So they go to the Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman says, that is negligence. And since that's negligence, so now you, the custodian, are obligated to pay for the value of the earrings. So zil shlim. So Rav Nachman says now to the custodian, you now have to pay because you were grossly negligent regarding the caretaking of the earrings. So lo shalom. the guy, even though Rav Nachman ruled that the custodian has to pay, the custodian refused to play. So also Rav Nachman Agbe Lapad Namine. So Rav Nachman says, look, that's an outstanding obligation. You're not paying an outstanding obligation, so we're foreclosing on a property of yours against the value of the earrings. So now Rav Nachman, fine. So Rav Nachman now basically ruled in favor of the owner of the earrings, and not only ruled in favor, but allowed a seizure to take place on property against the value of the earrings. L'sof ishtakech kipi, v'ikor. Now the earrings were eventually found, and not only that, but the value of the earrings went up in the interim. So Amar Rav Nachman, Hadra Kipala Marayu. So Rav Nachman now turns to the custodian, and Rav Nachman says to the custodian, you need to return the earrings back to the owner. The Hadra Apanala Mare. And as far as your seized property, that's going to be returned back to you. Amar Rava. So Rava says to Rav Nachman, wow, I did not understand that last part of the ruling. Because Havi Yasivni Kamid Rav Nachman Upirkin Hamafkin Have. So now Rava was in front of Rav Nachman, and they happen to have been learning together the third parak of Baba Metzia, and that's where we are right now. And the Amrile Shalim Velo Ratza Lishava. And what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah said that in the event that the Shomer pays for the item, he purchases the item. And so basically now Rava says to Rav Nachman, I don't understand. In this case, the Shomer paid for the item, albeit not willingly, but and in a moment we're going to make that distinction. But the Shomer paid for the item, and so now the Shomer basically paid for the earrings. And what did we learn yesterday? We learned yesterday that once the Shomer pays for the item, so now he gets to benefit from any increased value in the item. Now, we learned yesterday that the Shomer, once he pays for the item, gets to get kefel. Here, what Rav is basically saying to Rav Nachman is, hey, I think the Shomer, now that he paid for the item, gets to keep the earrings and appreciated value as well. I'll give you something interesting to think about. Remember what we learned yesterday? We learned yesterday that the only thing that the Shomer gets to keep is external appreciation, like kefil. Internal appreciation, like the shearings of the animal and the offspring of the animal, that stays by the owner. Tosos over here points out, you have to say this, otherwise the Gemara here doesn't make any sense, that appreciated value is more in line with kefil than it is with giza and vlad. Meaning appreciated value is considered an external benefit of the item and not considered an internal benefit that comes off the animal. Okay. And again, it's third Tosfos on the Amud. You can see the Tosfos inside, but it's something worthwhile to think about. How appreciation is to be viewed. Is it viewed as an external benefit or is it viewed as an internal benefit? Our Gemara, I mean, Tosfos makes this observation, clearly is viewing it as an external benefit.
Well, sure. All gold goes up.
Right.
Not just that one earring goes up.
Right. So, right. It's an external force. Right. Agreed. Okay, very good. Veloahadoli. Now, even though Rav says to Rav Nachman, I made this point to Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman did not respond to my point. Meaning, in the context of our Gemara, Rav Nachman basically waved me off, like go away. Meaning, I don't really view this as a good point. Vishapra Avedeloahadoli. But then Rav says, I thought about it more, and then I realized, you know what? I was wrong, and Rav Nachman was right. And I think that in such a situation, the owner of the earrings gets to take his earrings back. Why? Because my time, Hasam La Chuchula Beidina. Because consider, in the case of the Mishnah, the Shomer was paying for an item that he didn't have to pay for. And they didn't go to Beis Din. The Shomer said, look, mea culpa. It's my fault. I had the item was stolen from me. You know what? I'm just going to pay for the item. That is a purchase of the item. That doesn't have to go back. But over here, hacha, atrichula beidina. But over here, think about it. The Shomer lost the earrings. The Shomer actually was in refusal to pay. And we had to drag the Shomer into court in order to get the money out of him. So now that the earrings went up, you now want to reward the Shomer for his behavior? We had to force him to go to Beis Din in order to pay for the item. And even then he wouldn't pay for the item. And we had to seize his property. And now you want to reward the Shomer for his behavior? So the Rava says, I thought about it more. Rav Nachman was right. The earrings should go back to the owner. Now, Lamemer does have Rav Nachman to Shuma Hadar. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. So what are we saying right now? Seized property can go back to its original owner. And the Gemara says, this should sound familiar. We discussed this earlier. We're going to get to review this information again. In terms of whether or not seized property gets to go back to the owner. Shani Hasam Deshuma Betaosava Dekahava Kipa Mi'ikara. So the Gemara says, whether or not seized property can be bought back by its original owner, Gemara says, leave that out of our discussion. Why? Because over here, it was seized property. But seized property based on earrings, which we thought were lost, were never lost. That's why the original owner gets to get back his earrings. But it doesn't fall under the category over here of seized property. As long as we're on the topic of a person being able to buy back his seized property, the Gemara reviews. Amri Nardai Shuma Hadar Treisa Yarche Shasa. The yeshiva of Nardai said that if you had property seized from you because it was foreclosed against you, you have a year to buy it back. Amemer says, I happen to be from Narda, but I think that if property was foreclosed against you, you can buy it back indefinitely. You, the original owner of that property, have an indefinite right to buy back that property. And like the Gemara concluded earlier, and the Gemara is saying it right now again, and that is that if somebody foreclosed property against you, you have an indefinite right to buy back the property. The Torah says Vasisa Yasha Vatov, meaning that remember, the only reason why the property was seized against you is because you defaulted on a loan. Truth be told is that you didn't want to part with your property. You just defaulted on a loan. If at a later point in time you have the ability to buy back that property, do the right thing. Give the property back to its original owner, obviously only when he can satisfy the defaulted loan.
Rabbi, this came up before.
The Gemara said the same thing before.
Right. And I asked the question about the question was, does he have to sell the property?
Oh, wait. Oh, good. Excellent.
Right?
Your question is going to be answered right now. Pshita. Shama le lebalchov, azol yuvashama lebalchov didei. Amrin le lo adif at migavar da'asus minei. Okay, so let's start off like this. Let's say after a person had a property, foreclosed on a property. Now remember, we just concluded that even though you foreclosed on a property, the owner has an indefinite right to buy back from you. Let's say now a second creditor foreclosed the property from the first creditor. So the Gemara says at that point in time, the original owner could still buy it back. Because just like he had the right to buy back the property from you, he can also buy back the property from the second creditor. However, the Gemara now makes this point very clearly. Zavna, Orta, Yava Bematana. But let's say after the creditor foreclosed on a property, he either sold the property, he either bequeathed the property to the next generation, meaning he died, or he gave it as a gift to somebody. At that point in time now, done. Meaning now the defaulted borrower now no longer has the right to buy back that property. Because when you're buying a property, you are not thinking to yourself, oh, you know what, I'm going to buy that property, but property was really foreclosed, and I'm going to allow the borrower to buy it back from me any point in time. No! When you buy a property, or gifted a property, or given a property as an inheritance, your intent in receiving that property is to become the owner. So basically, there is a point in time where the chapter closes on the defaulted borrower, where the defaulted borrower cannot buy back his property when the lender either sells, bequeaths, or gifts the property.
Sounds
like that's it. The chapter closes.
What about a yovel?
What about? Let's assume right now that we're talking about sales. Shamal al insha v'insava. Oh, shamu mina deisha v'insava. What if either a woman forecloses on a property, or a property is foreclosed on her, and then she gets married? So umesa, ba benechse ishta lo keachave. How do we view her husband? The way we view her husband is like a lokeach. lo mahadav lo mahadrinan lay. And basically now, even though the husband inherits his wife's property, but the chachamim view that inheritance like lekuchos. The husband is considered like a buyer. So in the event that, let's go over case number one, where the woman is foreclosing on a property and then she dies and the husband inherits it, he is inheriting it like a buyer, and therefore the defaulted borrower no longer has a chance to buy back. Again, a point that we made already a number of times, we get to see it again, and that is that the takana that was made in Usha is that somebody who, a woman who dies, even though prior to her death she sold her nichse malug, the husband is viewed as a lokeach, retroactive to the time of the marriage, and therefore he gets to take the property. Agbe ihu bechovo. We are on the very top of Lamedal and Beis. We'll finish up this last part tomorrow. Just a couple more discussions. Actually, truth be told, one more discussion to be had in terms of a defaulted borrower's ability to buy back his property. We continue with this tomorrow. It's just one more point before we start the new Mishnah.